Well, hello and welcome again to the VFX Existential Crisis Podcast. We're in a slightly different format today. Chris is on vacation. He's at the World Cup, so enjoying Canada. We're excited to talk today with Rick Sander. Rick has been doing VFX for 3 decades. He's a VFX supervisor. He's done everything from Yellowstone to Titanic, and he has been a longtime contributor to the VFX community. He's also got an Emmy Award for Percy Jackson. So welcome, Rick. And one of the exciting features about Rick is that he's actually made it over the wall. We've had a lot of questions about, what do I do in this current climate? I've been in visual effects for my entire career, and now visual effects doesn't want me anymore. So what do I do? And so we're specifically talking to Rick about his transition out of the VFX industry and what that looks like. So let's start there. What made you transition out, Rick?
Well, hi, Graham. Good to talk to you. I think sitting unemployed for a year and a half in 2023-24 was what made me realize I got to find something else. And like, you're doing this thing where you think, oh, maybe it's just this, maybe it's just that. At a certain point, I realized that I might get one more job, but it will be the last one. Whatever it is, I can't do this again. We burned through our savings. It was very unpleasant. You know, I finished Percy Jackson and we were going to buy a house. We had the house all pricked out. We were ready to go. And then the deadline or the start date for season 2 kept getting pushed. And then some other things kept getting pushed. And in a very short amount of time, I went from getting calls every other month, once a month, to either do an executive job at a visual effects company or by checking my availability for crewing on a future show. And so whatever I was doing, I was constantly turning down work. I worked for 10 years steadily. There was always something to do. And then it just stopped. And, you know, the first 6 months, you're like, okay, this is fine. This can happen. And there's certainly been other strikes that if you've been around long enough, you know, they seem like blips, but they take a long time when you're going through them. And I was just like, I can't do this again. So I started looking for other jobs. My wife and I were living in Florida. We were staying with some friends. And I kind of stumbled into maybe I'll be a real estate agent. And I was interested in construction. I come from it. My family had a construction company. And I was like, I'll be a realtor. I could do that. I'm a people guy. I can talk my way through this. And oddly enough, 55 is the average age that someone becomes a realtor. And I was quickly approaching that age. So I thought, oh, you know, let me try this out. And I was looking at maybe it would be 6 months before I got my first transaction. And that seemed terrible. And at the same time, somebody said, hey, you know, I was working with another guy, but he became a real estate photographer. And he's now doing that instead of being a realtor. And I thought, well, I could probably do that. And I have all the equipment, or most of it. I have had a camera on my shoulder since I was 14. And so I thought, okay, I could probably get into that. So I shot a few houses. You start by shooting, you know, your own house. I shot a few houses and I was like, okay, I could do this. And then I got a call to work on 1923 season 2. And so with my last $10,000, we drove to Texas to start that project. And I was HOD on that project under Kevin Blank, awesome dude. And we were in prep for a month. And on the weekends, I would shoot real estate. And I was like, the second this show ends, I'm going to be awesome at this. So I kept shooting real, eventually we got into shooting and we were moving around and we couldn't really do it. But certainly through prep in the first month of the show, I shot houses every weekend. And that was coming as I was like getting a full HOD rate on 1923. I was badly shooting real estate and trying to build that business. And we thought we might stay in Austin after the show. So that's the second 1923 ended. the box of camera crap came out, and I started posting on Facebook that I was available.
Wow. So I definitely want to follow up on your career trajectory post 1923, but you touched on something interesting as we were talking, you're doing your introduction, and that is there's something different this time about the market, the Hollywood economy. If you've been through strikes before, as you have, there has always been a bit more optimism after the fact. What do you think is different this time?
Yeah. I think the entire economy is changing. And at the same time, if you look at who's running the studios, they are all focused on overseas content. There are certain statistics, like something like 80% of Netflix new original content was produced for overseas markets. And I see that in the types of projects that I was asked to get on board with. You know, there were projects in China or Japan or Korea or Southeast Asia somewhere usually. I think that there's a lot of AI stuff going on, and I think that there are a lot of people that are kind of waiting to see before they commit to another broad spectrum of slate of projects. And I think that there are enough studio heads who have seen a LinkedIn video that said that Hollywood is over because they made this 30-second AI video. And I think that stuff really has had an effect. I do think that behind the scenes, there's a lot of financial stuff going on, and that people are sort of reorienting away from live action film production towards stuff that I think will be kind of experiential, choose your own adventure. I think that it will use data that's available in your demographic and design content around you personally and then stream ads to you. That stuff all exists.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I felt like it's not coming back. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I think that's kind of a broadly held sentiment. I've been doing a lot of networking lately and talked to a ton of supervisors, and a lot of them don't have anything on the books. Those people who do have something on the books, it's like it's in the fall, but it's not greenlit, which to me is always a red flag. And I feel like we've had that rug pull. Every fall is supposed to be busy. Then every January is supposed to be busy. And really, since the strike, we haven't seen it at all. And certainly there's video effects production going on, but it's just not at the scale that it was before. And so what we're feeling is the contraction. It's very noticeable. There's just more capacity for visual effects than there actually is work right now.
You know, and of course, all of these things that we're talking about are not happening in a vacuum. There have been like how many visual effects offices or companies or their entire umbrella company have shut down in the last year and a half. It's not hard to see that those jobs, they're going somewhere else. I like to say people are like, oh, AI is going to make the next Godfather. Mm-hmm. But humans aren't making the next Godfather. Humans are making TikTok, you know, and they're making this like disposable, forgettable content that's meant to get data and service ads.
Right. So, one of the things that actually particularly appealed to me, Rick, about talking to you is that you're a believer in kind of taking the bull by the horns, if you will, and like not accepting things as they are and being bold and making a change. So getting out of VFX, obviously, it's a challenge. It's also probably a little sad, but you made the decision that, hey, this is the necessary next step, and you're bold enough to make it. Is that sort of a piece of advice you'd give every visual effects person sitting in the market right now?
You know, Graham, without getting into the question of like what this new business looks like, I had brunch the other day in here. I'm living in Yucca Valley, like kind of Joshua Tree, and I had brunch, and the bill came, and it was like $50 or $60, and I didn't think anything about it. And then I realized that that's the first time that I had gotten a check for a meal where I wasn't worried about where my next dollar was coming from in 10 years. Because even as like a well-employed visual effects supervisor on top shows for a decade or whatever, I never knew what was happening next.
Right.
There's like some Churchill quote where he says like that Americans and Brits always do the right thing after they've exhausted every other possibility.
Right.
And that's how I felt. Like, I waited a year and a half before I realized that, like, yeah, my girlfriend wasn't going to call me again.
Right.
And that's, right, that was it. I also thought that if I had gotten into real estate photography the month Percy Jackson ended in February 2023, I would not have gone back to, I wouldn't have gone back to the Yellowstone series.
Oh, that's fascinating. Like, so your outcome of making the transition was you actually found yourself in a better place than you would have been had things kind of kept going.
That's exactly correct. You know, you don't get that like shot of adrenaline when you've got your studio HOD paycheck and your car allowance and your per diems and your food. And like, they're bringing meals every day and like, paying, $6,000 a month in housing, like all that stuff's awesome, but you are worried every minute of it. Like, I really do think that. And I'll say this, like, we all have our imposter syndrome moments, but like, I'm a pretty in-demand guy. Like, I get along pretty good with people on film sets and I'm specialized in that. And I turn down a lot of projects and I was worried all the time. Mm. And I don't have that worry now. Like, am I rolling in the money, like at the top of the heap where, we're going in? Like, every entrepreneur is scratching out a living every day in every way they can. But it's a lot less worry. Like, I know where I'm going to be.
So what's interesting about that is you didn't do it in your 20s. You didn't do it in your 30s. You didn't even do it in your 40s. You're in your 50s, which is, my vintage as well. And we both find ourselves in this transition period. Was your age at that point an asset or a liability in making that transition?
That's a good question. I'm going to just start by saying everything I've done, I was forced into kicking and screaming.
Interesting.
I only did it after, like, there wasn't like... There was a long-term plan after the strikes ended. And I said, when this show ends in 8 months or 9 months, I'm going to get into real estate photography like full-time and like just commit to it. But there was a long time where I just sat by that phone waiting for it to ring. And I tried different things out kind of haphazardly. But when I committed to this, I committed to it. I don't know if that answers the question. I'm kind of all over the place.
Yeah, no, I think it does. How did...
55. How does my age affect it? You have... It's funny. I'm in an industry. I work mostly with realtors in Coachella Valley, which is like Palm Springs area. And almost everybody's older than me. So that...
You're the spring chicken.
Yeah, I'm still a little more younger. My wife works with me. She's 40. She's 18, I should say. but my wife works with me. And so we have a great time and we work with, the average age of your realtor is a little bit older. And then I do work with younger people and they, I'm a fairly active guy. I'm energetic and I get out there and I don't really like, I shot a house the other day and it was a 55 up community. And they're like, yeah, this is for seniors.
Hilarious.
So, yeah. Listen, how long is this going to go on? There's older photographers working, and it's a great industry. I get to move around a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I have found that from an entrepreneurial standpoint, being a bit older has helped. I think at one level, you get some credibility. People see the gray hair and they think you know what you're talking about, whether you do or not. I think also you get to draw on your lifetime of experience, good and bad, to sort of steer your decision-making. What I have experienced, though, in the traditional job market is it's less of an asset and more of a liability. I think, I've gone through the process of applying for jobs and I feel like, first of all, people don't know how to categorize like visual effects. I mean, I ran a studio. Yeah. I had a P&L and IT and HR, all the very traditional business functions reporting in. But I think recruiters struggle to make the leap between that and whatever I want to do next. And I feel like people perceive me as being expensive and it's been and old. So, there's some unfair things that get attached to that. You're not technologically savvy. You're not able to adapt, which of course is not true, because in VFX, those are requirements. But like you, I've been kind of largely forced into the entrepreneurial thing, but it's actually ironically working out. So I can't really complain. I'll take it. And so we talked a little bit about real estate. Was there, aside from, you know, your desire to be a realtor, was there anything else specifically driving you in that direction?
Well, I really had gone through a lot of other ideas, and I was trying to do project management. I have the PMP and the Google business, you know, Google professional, what is it, project manager certificate. I have a Six Sigma, I have an MBA. Nobody cared about any of that stuff. I went through extensive interview processes with Amazon, Netflix, about doing different technology roles. And they were all cool, and they were all project management based. And I was being sponsored by some pretty senior people in those organizations, like very senior people. And at a certain point, you realize that they are just interviewing you to not make an enemy of the person who's doing you the favor.
It's a courtesy interview.
You were never under any serious consideration. And you know, the Amazon guys just said, "We don't hire movie people. You're too crazy."
hilarious! Yeah. Well, there's that.
You know, I went through all these different things, and I wasn't getting anywhere. And frankly, I interviewed a lot of brokerages. You know, real estate is something that works for some people who are in our positions. And so that's what kind of drew me to it. One of the things I was really interested in is one of the brokerages was really into social media. And I was like, I could do social media. And that, like, a lot of traditional brokerages are like, here's how you order your postcards, and here's where you put your things on the doors, you know, to try to get people when they come home. And then other people are like making TikTok channels, and there was a lot of success with that. So what drew me into real estate was really the marketing of it. And I didn't realize that. I mean, it took me a month to figure out that that would be a good fit for me. And so you do have a certain credibility. I think if I were 20 years younger, it would be harder to relate in an authentic way to my clients, because most of my clients are in their 50s and 60s.
Right. And how much, if any, of your visual effects supervisor skill comes into play with your photography?
Well, that's a great question. I'm going to say this. There's probably a dozen other people that are doing what I'm doing. And some of them got in sooner and some of them got in later. And it all starts with an on-set visual effects supervisor's kit. And that has at least an SLR. You've got a tripod, you've got some experience with HDR bracketing, you generally have reviewed a shot or two, and you know what looks good, and you know how to express what vision you have when you want to edit a photo, and then maybe you've shot some footage, maybe you've had a 360 camera, like a Ricoh or Insta360. I had all of the stuff. I mean, I needed a couple like specialty things, but the first $3,000 or $4,000 worth of like camera, tripod, all that stuff, it was all sitting in a box on the floor in my living room. You know, I bought a light, I bought a couple of lenses that were specific to real estate. And then now my entire house is just filled with all these doodads. But everybody in visual effects has the ability to do this job and has some of the equipment they need to get started.
Right. And then how did you go about actually building your client base? Like, what was the strategy there? Because often that's the most intimidating part, is you may have the skills and now you're out on your own. How do you like actually get a book of business?
Well, YouTube University is a great place to start. There's two or three channels of people who talk about the business of real estate photography. There's a lot of real estate photographers, and there's all different types of market segments. There's people doing architectural and luxury. There's people that are doing 5 shoots a day, and they get in the house in 30 minutes and they get out. I'm I'm a fancy guy, so I decided luxury was for me, and I wanted to deal with people with expensive problems and not cheap problems, you know, like, you know how it goes. So what I did is I watched some videos. I found some video channels that appealed to me. I shot my own apartment that I was living in, which was in Miami, and I just shot the basic views. I put those photos on Facebook in a real estate group, and I said, if you have a house over $1 million that's furnished, I'll shoot your house for free. And I got a bunch of people that were checking in with me, because real estate photographers tend to not be great business people. And there's like a contentiousness in the personality somehow. So there's always room in a market to slide in there with some new clients, because there's always realtors looking for new people to work with. So I got my first few shoots. I shot 12 houses for free. My 13th house, I got paid $800 for. And after not having a dollar come in for a very long period of time, $800 for 3 or 4 hours of work was pretty great.
Well, that's outstanding. Yeah, it's interesting, because I think, you know, you mentioned that real estate photographers don't tend to be very good business people. I've found that true of visual effects artists as well, and maybe artists in general. I think there's a select group that are very good at both. But getting YouTube University was a great piece of advice. Like, you know, there's going to be things that people don't know how to kick off their business. I know for me, like, just accounting and getting, like, I mean, I've run accounting departments where I had people to do all this stuff, but you have to collect your own damn receipts and do your own bookkeeping. It's something quite different, right? You know, web building, all this stuff that I've had to do on my own. But it's quite empowering when you manage to get a dollar in through the door that came from your own sweat.
You know, when I say that you have the skills, like, somebody between, you know, college and 60, you've had some experience with all of this stuff. Like, I needed a website. I researched some names. I got a name. I got the Facebook accounts and all the socials. And in a day, I had a pretty good looking website for $50. You know, I put some of my photos up. There's some text as I did better. And then you find the time, and you're just constantly just laying track in front of you as you go.
That's cool.
I mean, listen, Graham, we're in it for a year, and I spend all day I make 100 YouTube videos or 100, you know, social media videos a week for my clients. Easy.
Oh, wow.
You know, sometimes more. It's crazy. And I don't have I really don't make my own content. Like, we have an Instagram and we post photos, but we're not we don't have people focused stuff where it's like me on camera talking about, you know, how to make your house look better for a sale. Like we've just started doing that stuff, and we're going to roll that out in the next week.
Oh, that's cool. So another sort of line of marketing or self-promotion.
I would also recommend that everybody listen to good podcasts about entrepreneur topics. There's one, Upflip, that's really good, and they have a lot of different, you get little tidbits from each little person, and you're like, oh, I can apply that, you know, and you, as a real estate photographer, you're driving around a lot, so you got time to listen to podcasts.
That's cool. So, I mean, you seem like you found a really good zone. Where do you see yourself a year from now?
You know, things have really been taking off. Last year was a bad year for real estate. Some people did very well. This business, you know, I often think about the overlap in personalities of your average real estate photographer and your average visual effects artist. It's about a 90% overlap. And where you as an entrepreneur, and it's the same thing I tell people on a VFX crew, we're not in the no business. We're there to create value for a client. And if you create that value, they will spread the word. It's by the way, I'm just going to say this, my worst real estate client is more enjoyable to work with than my best movie producer client.
Wow. That's saying
because,
something.
Because you get paid for your work. Like, you get... There is a value that they know comes from... So, like, there's a bunch of great statistics, but the number one is that, like, it's 80% of people book a tour of a house based on the photos alone. They, your realtors understand that. And they understand there's a ton of other great statistics. Like, if you do a Twilight photo, you get 3 times the clicks. This whole business is just about delivering clicks. If you can get clicks, if people click your Zillow link... Then they click it again to like get in there further, and they click it again to book the tour. Where what a VFX artist has to get past is the same stuff I hear on a film set, is that a lot of VFX crew were like, how can I measure this? And how, you know, where do I need time to do all this, you know, and like nobody wants to hear any of that stuff. The reason that some visual effects supervisors are successful is they get past those technical details and they're interested in providing value and making things possible for their clients. And that's what we try to do all the time.
That's cool. That's entrepreneurial words of wisdom.
Oh, you know, you asked where are things going. So we've got quite a body of work. We've got a bunch of clients. We do, you know, we started in photography, but we were having so many ups and downs. Like 1 month that we would get so many shoots, the next month it would be twice as many, and then it would be half as many. So we started doing social media retainer packages. So we shoot 16 videos a month or 24. We have different levels. And that is like a bit of revenue that we can depend on every month. So whether the market's good or bad, whether there's houses to shoot or not, we're making social media for our clients. And as we've been doing that, we started to branch out. So we started in photography. Now we're like 50-50 photography and video, where it's just focused on the realtor. We're not like trying to sell a house. It's the realtor talking to the camera kind of thing. We just booked a hotel chain that does glamping and RV. It's like a premium RV thing. We actually rebranded their company. So they had 17 separate websites. And I was like, I can't make content for 17 separate websites. So we brought it all under one umbrella. So we marketed this new company for them. And they are finding a lot of great things about that. And then now we have other sort of larger brands starting to contact us about doing their content. So I always feel like, you know, when I had my business and people would say, where do you see yourself? And I would say, I just hope to be in business 30 days from now.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're starting to take off the runway.
That's kind of cool. What a neat feeling that must be. And so if the phone rings and it's Marvel calling or Paramount or whomever, are you taking the call? Are you going back on set and working a million hours a day?
Absolutely not. I'll give you a couple examples. So I've done a couple commercial shoots. I got referred by some friends. I was in like Uruguay for a week. I was in Miami for a week, like just doing commercial shoots. And that's quite lucrative for 4 or 5 days away, and I can manage that. I do have a possible shoot coming up in a bit in Australia, and we'll limit that time. But I've turned down both staff jobs in the multi six figures, and I've turned down multiple. I have gotten some studio job offers, and I've turned them down. And I was like, it was just like, hey, I haven't talked to you in a while. I got this job coming up. Are you interested? And then I was like, if it's a real job, make me an offer. And they sent me a deal memo, and there was a great number attached to it. And I was like, nope.
And what's the main reason for the nope? Is it just a quality of life issue?
Because this job will end.
Yeah.
If I do that, this job's over. But when that job's over, it's really over. So like I've spent the last year building this thing up, and I get all the things I like. Listen, there's nothing cooler than like having coffee with Harrison Ford in the morning. And now you're like, you know, talking to a realtor in Desert Hot Springs about like a $200,000 double wide or something, right? It's like, it's a very, there's things where it's not, where you're like, oh, this is a big change.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting a lot more out of this
Yeah.
And I feel like this has a future. And frankly, I love talking to Harrison Ford in the morning, and I love talking to the realtor. Like, there is nothing better. That I had a client send me, he had run his own social media platforms through some platform, and it said, "How's your performance doing?" Because he wanted to see if I was performing for him. And he sent me all the results, and it was like, "You're doing better than 95% of other channels," and the blah, blah, blah. Your growth in this metric is doing good. Your growth in this metric is doing good. And so, like, I mean, I've worked in the industry for 30 years. I've been thanked once, for like pulling off this big project, in a resourceful, clever way with all these competing personalities and multiple languages. And like, you're killing yourself. And I do get a lot of job satisfaction from this. Like, people.
You're not wrong. The famous refrain for VFX, I mean, talk about ingratitude, is, "Oh, there's no visual effects in this movie. It's all in camera." It's like,
yeah. Come on. Listen, you're so right. You know, like, I haven't really thought about all of that stuff, but it's not just like I wasn't getting a job on 1923. It's there's news just pouring at you every day that the industry is going away and we don't care about you anyway.
Yeah. If we could replace you with AI, we would do so. I mean, that's sort of the message.
In a second. They're like sizing you up for where they're going to put the server where your chair is right now.
Exactly. But it's funny because, I mentioned on a previous podcast, and I think I'm hearing from you the same thing. It's like, as I get older, I kind of need less. And it's not a cost of living question. It's like my priorities have changed. I feel like when I was younger, I wanted the flashy car and the flashy wardrobe and all the signals of success that, the marketing tells us we need to have. But, I get a bit more wise, and it's all a charade in the end, right? And
Graham,
you can be happier with a much more modest success.
This is not a compromise on financial remuneration. It's like, you asked me where I could see myself in a year. I'm looking at, I have a path to $50,000 a month from doing this stuff.
It's not even a compromise on any of that stuff. It's just different.
No. I'm an arrogant, vain, I want a nice car. I, probably spend too much on certain things. And the only thing this is a compromise on is that people are less impressed when you tell them that you're a real estate social media content creator than when you say, like, I have pictures of, when you pull out a picture of you and Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you, that's fair. Like, to strangers, it matters more. But
the glamour level
in
visual effects is pretty cool. Like, if you get to go on set as you do, like, that is pretty cool. And not many people can say that. But I mean, you still have a lifetime of stories that you've earned, and can always go back to that well at cocktail parties, right?
Well, it's a good question. So some of the filmmaking stuff does come up quite a bit, and people do really like it, because people do, like, when you have a new client, they look you up and like, "Oh, I saw all the stuff you're doing, all this movie stuff." And when you are direct, like, I direct clients all day, right? So when we're talking and when we're doing a social media thing, and it's like, do this motion, you're going to wind up on this mark. We're putting tape on the ground. It's just like a shoot. But instead of a film crew with 30 people there, it's me and my wife and an assistant, and we're lugging all the stuff out of the car. But we come at this from an expectation of, like, a top television show. Like, now I'm lit by a studio full of lights,
Yeah.
Like, I there's no compromise there. And people understand that they're getting something special, because they're all nervous about how they're going to look, especially, it's their first time. And when you can deliver to them something where you're like, where they know, like, I don't go in there going like, I'm coming from the film industry. I try to lie and I tell them I've been a real estate photographer a lot longer than I have than a year. Like, I've been doing this a year. I've shot 160 houses. I haven't been in it that long, and nobody seems to care, because what they care about is I post my work on Facebook and they call me up and they have a problem and I can solve that problem for them. Because when I shoot a house, and this is like, you can work for a year on a movie and it can bomb in the box office, but when I shoot a house they get a certain number of calls and people with their open houses. It sells faster for more money because I know how to market this stuff.
Right.
And now I'm marketing more stuff. And that brings a confidence that I think most people in visual effects, especially if you were kind of getting into the senior ranks, you bring a lot to the table. And that value is something you can give your clients that no one else can.
So if you had one piece of advice or two pieces of advice you'd give to someone who's visual effects, who's been on the sidelines for a period of time, what would it be?
Don't wait 1 minute longer. Go to LinkedIn. Change your headline to "You're a real estate photographer." Take down all the movie crap because it's not coming. It's like it would be like keeping pictures of your ex who's never coming back and going like, maybe they'll come back. They're not coming back. I'm a fairly in-demand person, and I knew it was time to get out. And I'm not saying that other people won't. Like, listen, I'm not good at studios. You know, Graham and I work together at a studio. I'm not good at a corporate environment. I'm good on a film set. And the musical chairs is taking away too many chairs all at once. Get a camera, borrow a camera, shoot your living room. It's going to be terrible. It's going to take forever. It's going to be horrible. And then the next one will be easier. The next one will be easier. And in 3 months, you'll replace your visual effects income.
Wow. There you go, folks.
3 months.
3 months. You can do it. Put your mind to it. Learn some new skills and leverage those old ones. Well, awesome, Rick. Thank you so much for taking some time. I hope everyone found some inspiration here. This is a new series we're going to try with looking at people who have made the leap into something new and exciting. And thanks, Rick, for being our first victim.
Thank you very much, Graham. Graham, I just want to end with saying that if anybody wants to reach out to me, I'm all over Facebook and LinkedIn. You can find me under listpop.live. I'm on Instagram and I'm on the web. And if you're a visual effects person and if you're 55 and you think you are struggling and you don't know what to do, it's a bad place to be in. Send me a message and I'll get you started.
Outstanding. Well, thanks a lot and ciao for now, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Thank you.